You're listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. Normally on Fridays we have a long show. Today will not be a long show. We're somewhat pressed for time. The studio has to close at 5 o'clock sharp, so I have about 50 minutes to give you my opinions as to what's going on. And this is still related to Orlando, but I want to really bring it back to the real threat that we're facing. And it's certainly not guns. I'm in a gun-free zone, and I've yet to see a gun walk in and shoot me. What I'm afraid of is, because we have a lot of international students, and most of them are pleasant, nice folks, but I hope and pray that one day some of these students don't decide to walk in and shoot up the place. Because we do face a threat, a real threat, a dangerous threat that's spreading across Europe, it's spreading across South America, Africa, and the United States. What am I talking about? It's radical Islam. Now, what is radical Islam? That's a big subject that takes many hours, if not days, to explain. So let me just play a short clip explaining why radical Islam is very much the most dangerous ideology that we face today.
What is the world's most dangerous ideology? In the first part of the 20th century, the answer was fascism. First manifest in Italy in the 1920s, and then in Nazi Germany and in Imperial Japan. It took a world war and 50 million dead to stamp it out. In the second half of the 20th century, the answer was communism. Between the Soviet Union, Mao's China, and their client states, at least 100 million people were killed in its wake. Today, the answer is Islamism, a radical and often violent form of Islam. Like fascism and communism, Islamism is totalitarian in nature. The state controls everything. Also, like fascism and communism, Islamism is inherently expansionist. It always seeks to get bigger, cross borders, and bring as many peoples as possible under its control. And, like fascism and communism, many of Islamism's adherents are prepared to kill to achieve its aims. Those aims are antithetical to everything Western and other free societies stand for. Free speech, free enterprise, freedom to practice or not to practice any religion, freedom of assembly, a free press, and, of course, fundamental human and civil rights for all their citizens. Islamism completely rejects the Western principle of separating religion from government. In its view, governments are legitimate only if they rule according to religious law. In Islamism's case, Sharia, Islam's extensive body of sacred laws. Sharia is based on the teachings of the Quran and the Sunnah. The Quran is believed to be the literal words of Allah, as revealed to his prophet Muhammad in the 7th century. And the Sunnah consists of the words and deeds attributed to Muhammad. Islamists interpret Sharia to hold that anyone born Muslim must remain Muslim and face execution if they convert to any other religion, that adulterers must be stoned to death, that anyone who insults Islam or Muhammad must either be severely whipped or executed, and that thieves should have a limb cut off. In addition, Islamists condone polygamy and child marriage. These beliefs are being put into practice right now in, among other places, Iran, the Sudan, Saudi Arabia, the Muslim parts of Nigeria, parts of Pakistan, Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and wherever else Sharia has established a foothold. If Islamists were content to live under strict Sharia law in their own communities and leave everyone who doesn't want to live that way alone, they wouldn't be a threat to the rest of the world. But that would not be Islamism. Islamism wants the entire world governed by Sharia, and anyone who opposes Islamist expansionism is the enemy and must be destroyed. That, of course, includes the United States, all of Europe, and Israel. But it also includes fellow Muslims. Indeed, Islamists have killed far more Muslims than members of any other group. So how many Islamists are there? Nobody knows for sure, but we can make some conservative calculations. There are approximately 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. How many of these are Islamists? A 2013 Pew Research poll offers some clues. 86% of Muslims in Pakistan, 80% in Egypt, and 65% in Jordan support the stoning of adulterers, 79% in Afghanistan, 62% of Palestinians, and 58% in Malaysia, considered a moderate Muslim country, support the death penalty for Muslims who convert from Islam. If only 10% of the world's Muslims are Islamists, and the percentage is likely higher, that's 150 million people. Among these, how many are willing to take violent action to enforce their Islamism? Here we're talking about Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, the Taliban, Hamas, Hezbollah, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and other groups that send suicide bombers into markets, explode car bombs at funerals, throw acid in the faces of girls who attend school, murder sisters or daughters who defy the will of a brother or father, or who fly hijacked airplanes into buildings. This is a very hard number to pin down. So let's again be cautious and say the figure is only 2% of that 150 million. That's still 3 million people, 3 million potential terrorists organized by a common ideology and supported by many more. The good news is that hundreds of millions of Muslims are not radical Islamists. Just to cite one example, the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood governed Egypt for 1 year in 2012. But enough Egyptians were so outraged by the Brotherhood's harsh imposition of Sharia law that they staged perhaps the largest demonstrations in human history against the Muslim Brotherhood and brought that government down. Since the beginning of the 20th century, every generation has been confronted with a lethal threat to freedom and fundamental human rights. Free people defeated the last two totalitarian threats, fascism and communism. If we want to preserve freedom, we, non-Muslims and Muslims alike, will have to defeat the threat of our time, Islamism. I'm Raymond Ibrahim, author of the Al-Qaeda Reader for Prager University.
I agree with most of what was said in that video, although I think he underestimated the number of people that really believe in radical Islam. I think it approaches maybe the population of the United States or as much as twice that, another anywhere from 300 to 600 to 800 million people. Does that mean they're all terrorists? No. But the ones that believe in radical Islam are potential terrorists. Let's get a second opinion, if you will, that radical Islam is a minority.
Hey, I'm Ben Shapiro with Reality Check. A couple of weeks ago, HBO's Bill Maher got into it with the Islamic expert and horrifyingly mediocre actor who should never, ever, 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 ever play Batman, Ben Affleck, over whether Islam was indeed a violent religion. Here's the exchange.
And you're painting a the whole group religion with that.
No, no, let's get down to who has the right answer here. A billion people, you say. All these billion people don't hold any of
billion
these...
five or something.
Don't hold these pernicious beliefs?
No, I wouldn't. Well, they don't.
Of course, he's not alone in taking the PC position that Muslims the world over are tolerant and liberal. He's joined by our president, Barack Obama.
Islam teaches peace. Muslims the world over aspire to live with dignity and a sense of justice.
Wow, it's just like John Lennon's Imagine. Now, the question isn't whether Islam itself is violent. It's what its adherents believe, because that's what they act upon. There's plenty of violent material in the Old and New Testaments. Hey, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I read the Old Testament a lot. But believers in those particular texts are not currently ramming airliners into towers or beheading journalists or mutilating female genitalia. So, let's examine the question. Is radicalism in the Muslim world a tiny minority phenomenon? So to answer that question, we need to define our terms. We're really not talking about people who are active terrorists. Radical beliefs are a lot broader than terrorists, and anybody who argues otherwise is being naive or foolish or disingenuous. But terrorists draw their moral, financial, and religious support from those who are not terrorists themselves. So, who are the radicals? Ben Affleck actually was right on this. There are approximately 1.6 billion Muslims on the planet, and they're from 49 different countries in terms of where they have a majority. All the population stats, by the way, are from Pew Research as of 2011. Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim country. It's got almost 205 million Muslims living there. According to one 2009 poll, it showed almost 50% of Indonesians actually support strict Sharia law, not just in Indonesia, but in a lot of countries, and 70% blamed the United States, Israel, or somebody else for 9/11. So, You make that calculation, it's about 143 million people who are radicalized. You scared yet? You know, we're just getting started. Okay, Egypt, 80 million Muslims. According to that same 2009 poll, it showed that 65% want strict Sharia law in every Islamic country, and almost 70% said that they had positive or mixed feelings about bin Laden. So that's 55.2 million more radicals. Pakistan has almost 179 million Muslims. 76%, just over three quarters, want strict Sharia law in all Islamic countries. That is another 135.4 million radicals. Bangladesh, not a country you tend to think of as Muslim, but there are 149 million Muslims living there. As of 2013, just over a quarter said suicide bombings or targeting of civilians was sometimes justified. Another 82% want Sharia to be the official law of the country, and two-thirds said honor killings of women can sometimes be justified. Honor killings, two-thirds. It's 121.9 million radicals. Nigeria, 75.7 million Muslims live there. 71% favor Sharia law. That's 53.7 million people. Iran, 74.8 million Muslims. 83% favor implementation of Sharia law as of last year. So that's 62.1 million more radicals. Turkey has 74.7 million Muslims. And 32%, this is a moderate Muslim country, probably the most moderate Muslim country, 32% said honor killings of women could actually be justified sometimes. So that's 23.9 million radical Muslims in our moderate ally, Turkey. Morocco, 32.4 million Muslims live there. Just over three quarters support Sharia law. That's 24.6 million radical Muslims in Morocco. Iraq, 31.1 million Muslims live there. 78% say honor killings of women can sometimes be justified. That amounts to 24.3 million Muslim radicals. Afghanistan, 24 million people. A huge majority, 76%, support at least occasionally, or just once in a while, honor killings of women. 99% actually want Sharia to be the law of the land. So it's like a Cuban election over there. 24 million radical Muslims over in Afghanistan. Jordan, smaller Muslim country, 6.4 million Muslims. Right now, Hamas is enjoying like a 60% approval rating. So 3.8 million radical Muslims in Jordan, which is, again, a moderate country. Palestinian areas, right? We're sending literally hundreds of millions of dollars to the Palestinian areas. We are, the American taxpayers. 4.3 million Muslims live in the Palestinian areas. 78% of those had positive or mixed feelings about bin Laden. 89% support terror attacks on our ally, Israel. 89% support Sharia law. We should give them a state, folks. That's 3.83 million radical Muslims. How about in the West? Okay, let's take it to France. France, 4.7 million Muslims live there. A 2007 poll showed 35% of French Muslims said suicide bombings could sometimes be justified. It's 1.6 million radical Muslims living in France. Great Britain, 2.8 million Muslims living there. 78% wanted cartoonists of Muhammad legally prosecuted. So we're talking about 2.2 million radical Muslims in Great Britain. How about here in the United States? Well, we have a very moderate Muslim population. We do. 2.6 million Muslims live here, according to Pew Research. 13% said violence against civilians can be justified. 19% said they were either favorable toward Al-Qaeda or just didn't know. You know, because who knows, really? That's almost 500,000 radical Muslims here in the United States. Here is the total of the countries that we've gone through just now. 680,030,000. 680,030,000 radical Muslims. And that's out of a total population in those countries of 942.4 million Muslims total. And it seems fair to assume that similar proportions of people in countries like, say, like Algeria, Syria, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Tunisia, Somalia, and Libya are also radicalized. And if they are, then, well, we're above 800 million Muslims who are radicalized, more than half the Muslims on Earth. That's not a minority. That's now a majority. And that's still not even surveying hundreds of millions of Muslims in other countries. In other words, the myth of the tiny radical Muslim minority is just that. It's a myth. And, unfortunately, it's a myth that's going to get a lot of civilized people killed.
I played that video because most Americans don't know the scope of the problem. One of the first things you should do when you're confronted with a problem is to scope it. How big is the problem? Or the potential problem? Because you don't want to waste resources and time on something that's trivial. I don't regard radical Islam as trivial. I regard it as a threat. Of the 1,600 million Muslims or believers in Islam in the world, I think that's a fair estimate that maybe half or more, that's 800 million, have been radicalized. They are radical Islamists. Does that mean they're all terrorists? No. But what do they want? They want the imposition of Sharia law. In other words, they want to replace our laws in the United States, both federal and state, and our Constitution with Sharia law. Now, right now, that's not going to happen, because right now, the majority of the people in this country are not Islam. And even the people of the Islamic faith that are here, only a small percentage, 5, 10, 15%, really are radicalized that want Sharia law here. But what is the big picture? What ultimately, what are their goals? Let's look at what today many would consider the biggest threat, the Islamic State.
It seems that hardly a day goes by in which the Islamic State, also known as ISIS or ISIL, doesn't appear in a newspaper or on a TV news screen. And the news is always bad, hideous death and wanton destruction of a type rarely seen in modern history. So what is the Islamic State? Where did it come from? What does it want? And why? Let's try to answer these questions in turn. First, ISIS is the illegitimate child of Saddam Hussein's regime and Al-Qaeda. Saddam's former military and intelligence officers hold many of ISIS's most senior positions and have overseen the group's rise to prominence. In 2002 and early 2003, some Al-Qaeda members relocated from Afghanistan to Iraq, where they prepared to fight the Americans, who toppled Saddam Hussein's regime in March 2003. These jihadists became known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq when their leader, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, swore his allegiance to Osama bin Laden in 2004. Zarqawi, a murderous psychopath, was finally killed by U.S. and Iraqi forces in June 2006. Following his death, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was rebranded as the Islamic State of Iraq. In 2010, a new leader took control of the group, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Taking advantage of the power vacuum left by the complete U.S. withdrawal from Iraq in 2011 and the Syrian civil war that began that same year, Baghdadi and his lieutenants greatly expanded the size and scope of the organization. At first, Baghdadi was loyal to al-Qaeda's senior leadership, but in 2013 he defied orders from his superiors and declared that his group was now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or Levant, known by its acronyms ISIS and ISIL. It's worth noting that ISIS continues to market Osama bin Laden's endorsement of them to this day. What does ISIS want and why? ISIS is attempting to resurrect an empire similar to those that arose in Islam's early history. These empires were referred to as caliphates and led by a caliph, the Muslims' chief ruler, also known as the Emir of the Faithful. This is, in fact, how Baghdadi's followers now refer to him. ISIS relies on a rich Islamic mythology, with citations from Islamic texts, to justify its actions and portray itself as the true heirs of Muhammad. Their propaganda videos use Islam's early history to frame their actions as part of an ongoing conflict with the Crusaders. ISIS's leaders want their followers to believe they are fighting as part of the same religious war. When ISIS's Libyan branch executed 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in 2015, ISIS advertised the slayings in a video titled, "A Message Signed with Blood to the Nation of the Cross." The Nation of the Cross, of course, meaning Christians. That's why on Libya's Mediterranean shores, the lead executioner of the Egyptian Coptic Christians pointed his knife in the direction of Italy and promised to conquer Rome, the symbolic seat of Christendom. Despite seeking to spark an interfaith war, however, most of ISIS's victims are Muslims, especially Shiite Muslims for whom ISIS, which is Sunni Muslim, harbors a special animosity. ISIS claims that any Muslim who does not swear bay'ah, an oath of allegiance, to Baghdadi is an infidel or an apostate. Even ISIS's rival jihadists and al-Qaeda are considered apostates because they refuse to genuflect to Baghdadi. In November 2014, Baghdadi announced that his caliphate had expanded into several areas outside of Iraq and Syria. Baghdadi's people set up provinces everywhere from West and North Africa to the Arabian Peninsula to South Asia. ISIS argues that Muslims owe these provinces their loyalty. Most of these provinces control little territory, but they have become prolific killers. Just over 1 year after Baghdadi's announcement, the Islamic State's provinces had already engaged in hundreds of terrorist attacks. On October 31, 2015, for example, the Islamic State's province in Sinai brought down a Russian airliner, killing all 224 people on board. In sum, ISIS is attempting to become a permanent totalitarian state, inspired by the caliphates of Islam's first decades. From this base, they will spread their ideology to the rest of the world. Anyone who stands in the way is marked for death. But ISIS's caliphate claim rests on its ability to control territory. This is both its strength and Achilles' heel. Should it lose significant ground in Iraq and Syria, its caliphate claim will become tenuous, severely damaging its legitimacy in the eyes of many Muslims. How this might happen is a key question for the United States, Europe, Asia, and many in the Arab world. But this much we know, it will take much more than airstrikes. I'm Tom Jocelyn of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies for Prager University.
You may ask, why am I talking about this subject today? Why is it in the news? Now, obviously, we have the shootings in Orlando, and the shooter pledged allegiance to Baghdadi, the head of the caliphate, the head of the Islamic State, that's trying to spread his beliefs across the world and do it by killing people. They're very much a totalitarian regime, and they rule by fear, they rule by terror, and there's much to fear if you pay close attention. But we're really talking about this, not just because of the Orlando shooting, but because Donald Trump and other of the Republican candidates have repeatedly said we have a president that refuses to put three words together, radical Islamic terrorist. Now, in previous shows, I made a point that there are really four words, radical Islamic terrorist jihadis. Jihadists are soldiers, warriors. They're viewed as holy warriors. That are what the military forces of the Islamic State believe. They are holy warriors, and they're in a religious war against the infidels, the apostates, the Shiites, which is a minority sect of Islam. They usually, if they capture a Shiite, they kill him on the spot or execute him. They might torture him, play with them for a while, get some information. But ultimately, they don't take prisoners, they kill you. And they're spreading across Europe as we speak. They're spreading across Africa. They're in South America. And yes, they're coming to the United States. Surprise, they're already here. They're trying to recruit American citizens, radicalize them, using Facebook and any other social networking sites. They are sophisticated, and they're recruiting. And people are joining up, and they're acting on what they hear and see. And we saw that last week in Orlando, Florida. And Donald Trump raised the fact that we have a president, until this week, would not say the words radical Islamic terrorist. He still hasn't said it, but he at least said radical Islam. That's some progress. And then he immediately changed the subject. Let me just briefly play what's on the president's mind. And I encourage you to view the whole speech, but this came towards the end.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticize this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. That's the key, they tell us. We can't beat ISIL unless we call them radical Islamists. What exactly would using this label accomplish? Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction. Since before I was president, I've been clear about how extremist groups have perverted Islam to justify terrorism. Not once has an advisor of mine said, man, if we really use that phrase, we're going to turn this whole thing around. Not once. So if someone seriously thinks that we don't know who we're fighting, if there's anyone out there who thinks we're confused about who our enemies are, that would come as a surprise to the thousands of terrorists who we've taken off the battlefield. The intelligence and law enforcement officers who spend countless hours disrupting plots and protecting all Americans, including politicians who tweet and appear on cable news shows. They know who the nature of the enemy is. There's no magic to the phrase radical Islam. It's a political talking point. It's not a strategy. Now, up until this point, this argument about labels has mostly just been partisan rhetoric. And sadly, we've all become accustomed to that kind of partisanship, even when it involves the fight against these extremist groups. And that kind of yapping has not prevented folks across government from doing their jobs, from sacrificing and working really hard to protect the American people. But we are now seeing how dangerous this kind of mindset and this kind of thinking can be. We're starting to see where this kind of rhetoric and loose talk and sloppiness about who exactly we're fighting, where this can lead us. We now have proposals from the presumptive Republican nominee for President of the United States to bar all Muslims from emigrating to America. We hear language that singles out immigrants and suggests entire religious communities are complicit in violence. Where does this stop? The Orlando killer, one of the San Bernardino killers, the Fort Hood killer, they were all U.S. citizens. Are we going to start treating all Muslim Americans differently? Are we going to start subjecting them to special surveillance? Are we going to start discriminating against them because of their faith? We've heard these suggestions during the course of this campaign. Do Republican officials actually agree with this? Because that's not the America we want. It doesn't reflect our democratic ideals.
That was President Obama towards the end of a press conference that he gave Tuesday, the early part of this week. Now, I played it because what has he done since? He's changed the subject and focused it on gun rights, gun control, and attacking the Second Amendment. Now, if the president and Hillary Clinton want to repeal the Second Amendment, then tell the American people that and see how far you're going to get. They won't do that. We knew early on that the shooter in Orlando was a Muslim, and he pledged allegiance to the Islamic State, who is a great threat to the United States. They are radical Islamists, but they're not the only ones. Islam is in over 50 countries. They're majority in 49, and we estimate that probably half are radicalized and want Sharia law, religious law, be the law of the land. They want a theocracy led by a caliphate. The American people don't want that, and that's the part of the story that President Obama, as well as big lie media, are not focusing in on. They don't want the American people to know the truth. The president is being disingenuous when he thinks it's a labeling problem. It's not a labeling problem. You need to know who your enemies are, what motivates them, and what are their goals. And their goals are to replace the U.S. Constitution, U.S. law, with Sharia law. Their ultimate goal is world domination, where everyone is Muslim and there's one caliphate or ruler. It's very much a totalitarian regime, and it's expansionist. They're very similar to the threats faced by the United States in World War II, by Nazi Germany, as well as Imperial Japan, and later in the Cold War with the Soviet Union and Communist China. You see, it's more than a religion. It's an ideology, but it's really politics. It's about power and control, in this case, using a religion to control the people. Now, if you want to live in Sharia law, fine. I suggest you stay where you are, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Syria, Pakistan, Libya, stay there. We don't want you in this country if you're a believer in Sharia law and want to replace the Constitution and our laws. You're not welcome. But the president doesn't want to say that. He has a soft, bleeding heart for Islam. We live in dangerous times. And a couple of days later, the CIA director testified before Congress. I was going to play, I thought I had a clip of the testimony, and I was going to play the whole clip, but I don't really have the time, and I'm not finding the clip. But the reason why I wanted to play it, it focused very narrowly on the Islamic State. And the bottom line is, they're growing, and they're still a threat. They're spreading into other countries, such as Libya, and from Libya, parts of Africa. You need to know who the enemies of the United States are and its people. You need to know the threat. Let me play another short clip on Islam, President Obama, and the Establishment Clause.
As I'm sure you already know, not long ago, Pastor Terry Jones and his church put the Quran on trial, found it guilty, and sentenced it to this. Now, I've said before that I'm against burning books and that I disagree with the actions of Pastor Jones, but that's the great thing about America. We're allowed to disagree. I can say, hey, Pastor Jones, I think book burning is backwards and barbaric. And he can say, too bad. These are desperate times. We're trying to make a point. The reason people can discuss their differences and not kill each other in the United States is that over the past two centuries, we've come to respect the free speech rights of all citizens. In countries that haven't learned to respect certain basic freedoms, disagreements often lead to violence and bloodshed, as you can see from the deadly protests in Afghanistan. This is why it's so disturbing that U.S. lawmakers are now apparently looking for ways to limit free speech about Islam. Senator Lindsey Graham recently said this.
You know, I wish we could find some way to hold people accountable. Free speech is a great idea, but we're in a war. During World War II, you had limits on what you could say if it would inspire the enemy.
Freedom of speech is a great idea, but not if it might lead to problems. As the mighty Patrick Henry said, give me liberty so long as it doesn't offend Muslims.
Anytime we can push back here in America against actions like this that put our troops at risk, we ought to do it.
The government needs to push back against free speech. Let me see if I've got this straight. The U.S. military and its allies are engaged in Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. One of the goals of this mission is to bring a lasting democracy to the Afghan people. Let's face it, we're trying to make Afghanistan more like the West, at least in terms of minority rights, women's rights, and so on. But according to Senator Graham, in order to make Afghanistan more like America, we have to make America more like Afghanistan. If we want to win Operation Enduring Freedom over there, we need to start Operation Enduring Sharia over here. Yes, if you want victory over the Taliban, just let the Taliban revise the Bill of Rights. Some people are worried that Senator Graham's plan, if successful, would be the beginning of Sharia in the United States. I hate to be the one to inform everyone, but we've already got Sharia in the United States. And no, I'm not talking about Dearborn, Michigan, where Judge Mark Summers and Judge Michael J. Callahan have ruled that police have probable cause to arrest a Christian, even if the Christian hasn't committed a crime and hasn't been accused of committing a crime. The Fourth Amendment no longer protects Christians from illegal search and seizure in the city of Dearborn. But right now I'm not talking about a single city. Sharia has already replaced part of the Bill of Rights of the U.S. Constitution. Sounds crazy, right? It would sound crazy to me, too, if I didn't know what I'm about to say. Let's look at a few video clips. Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton condemning Quran burning while speaking at a Muslim iftar dinner during Ramadan.
I am heartened by the clear, unequivocal condemnation of this disrespectful, disgraceful act.
According to President Obama, God is against burning the Quran, and if you pray about it, the angels will tell you.
And he says he's praying on it.
Yeah, I hope he listens to those better angels.
A few days ago, General David Petraeus, commander of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan, condemned Pastor Jones for burning the holy Quran.
We condemn the action of an individual in the United States who burned a holy Quran. That action was hateful, it was intolerant, and it was extremely disrespectful.
So, there you have it, the official position of U.S. leaders on burning a religious text. My question for Secretary of State Clinton and President Obama and General Petraeus is this. Do you think Americans are so dull, ignorant, stupid, slow-witted, and scatterbrained that we forgot about this little incident?
Bibles written in Pashto and Dari, the two most common Afghan languages. Bibles sent by a church to a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan. Bibles that were later burned by the U.S. government.
Who burned the Bibles? A bunch of Muslim radicals?
Burned by the U.S. government.
Who? A toothless hillbilly straight out of Deliverance?
Burned by the U.S. government.
The U.S. government?
The U.S. government.
But I thought only racist, intolerant bigots burned holy books. That's what I've been repeatedly told by the same government that burned these Bibles.
It was their best judgment at the time. The best way to deal with it was to destroy them. And I understand that they were burned.
Why would the U.S. government burn Bibles?
The leadership confiscated these Bibles so they could not be distributed here in Afghanistan.
I don't get it. Wouldn't the Muslims of Afghanistan welcome Christian evangelists with open arms on account of Islam being so peaceful and such?
A U.S. military spokesman tells CNN that kind of religious outreach could have provoked a violent backlash against Americans in this devoutly Muslim nation.
Interesting. You don't burn the Quran, because if you do, Muslims might go on a killing spree. But you do burn the Bible, because if you don't, Muslims might go on a killing spree.
Islam has a proud tradition of tolerance.
But why burn the Bibles?
The decision was made to throw the Bibles away, and in war zones, U.S. troops are required to burn their trash.
Ah, now I understand. You had to burn the Bibles because it's military policy to burn garbage. Would you like to know what the military's policy is when it comes to the Quran? I have here a copy of a Department of Defense memorandum distributed at Gitmo, explaining how U.S. soldiers are to handle the Quran if they absolutely must touch a copy. Check out the highlighted portion. Clean gloves will be put on in full view of the detainees prior to handling. Two hands will be used at all times when handling the Quran in manner signaling respect and reverence. Care should be used so that the right hand is the primary one used to manipulate any part of the Quran due to the cultural association with the left hand. Handle the Quran as if it were a fragile piece of delicate art.
The Holy Quran, the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran.
According to U.S. government policy, you must handle the Quran with respect and reverence, as if it were a delicate piece of art. But feel free to burn the Bible, because that's just what you do with garbage. If you burn the Quran, the government will condemn your actions. If you burn the Bible, hey, had to be done. What's this mean? It means that the U.S. government has given the Quran a privileged status over all other books. They say it's wrong to burn religious texts, but their actions show they really only care about one religious text. This means, of course, that the government has violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. They're giving a special position to the Holy Book of Islam. And what has replaced the Establishment Clause? How about Surah 9, verse 33?
The Holy Quran teaches that
it is he who has sent his messenger, Muhammad, with guidance and the religion of truth, Islam, to make it superior over all religions, even though the mushrikun, polytheists, pagans, idolaters, disbelievers in the oneness of Allah, hate it. If you have a Quran, you might want to read this verse in context. Verse 29 commands Muslims to fight those who do not believe in Allah. Verse 30 condemns Christians and Jews and calls for our destruction. Verse 31 claims that Christians and Jews have abandoned pure monotheism. Verse 32 says that unbelievers try in vain to put out Allah's light. And finally, verse 33 declares that Allah will make Islam superior to all other religions. So our leaders are giving Islam the special treatment it demands.
A holy Quran, a holy Quran, a holy Quran.
This is why, even though the vast majority of religiously motivated hate crimes in the U.S. are directed against Jews, we're having hearings on anti-Muslim bigotry. Why are Muslims more important than Jews? Surah 3, verse 110 says to Muslims,
the Holy Quran tells us,
You are the best of peoples ever raised up for mankind. Muslims are the best people in the world. But who are the worst people in the world? Jews, Christians, and other non-Muslims. Surah 98, verse 6.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
verily, those who disbelieve in the religion of Islam, the Quran, and Prophet Muhammad, from among the people of the scripture, Jews and Christians, and al-Mushrikun, will abide in the fire of hell. They are the worst of creatures.
I'm going to interrupt it there. I want to summarize what we're looking at. The president thinks the problem is gun control. Well, it is a problem. I'm in a gun-free zone on a college campus, and most colleges are gun-free zones. What happens if a terrorist decides to shoot up some students because he's offended? You see, the American right to keep and bear arms does not extend to college campuses. That's disarming the American people against the threats of terrorism. And guess what? Sharia is in our neighborhoods. I'm literally 100 feet away from a so-called meditation room. Who uses this so-called meditation room? Believers in the Islamic faith. We have given them a preference. The way the lying left deals with it is to say, well, it's available to everybody. We did not have that several years ago. But because we do have several hundred students from many countries that believe in Islam, we've given them their own prayer room, and they use it. That's special treatment. This is a public institution. It shouldn't happen. We have Catholics, Baptists, Presbyterian, Jews, all faiths. They weren't demanding their prayer rooms. They either pray in silence or attend their churches or temples. But we do have now a so-called, quote, meditation room that is used every day by Muslims. And they call for prayer. One time, one evening, I was crossing the campus, and I heard what I now know is the Muslim call for prayer. This was late in the evening, and there was a Muslim student dressed as a Muslim shouting it out. Not shouting it, but singing it, if you will. Now, most people are good people, but today we're faced with a majority that are now radical Islamist. Not tens of millions, hundreds of millions. And it only takes a small percentage of that number to engage in terror, and we'll have incidents like we had in Orlando across this nation. The problem, Mr. President, is not gun control. The problem is radical Islam and its goals. You need to know the enemy, not keep distracting the American people by saying it's a labeling problem. It's not a labeling problem. It's a problem that you have with telling the truth to the American people about the real threat that America faces. With that, I'll close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.